This podcast is part of the Midwest Podcast Network. Find out more about our other shows and how to support our network at MidwestPodcastNetwork.com.
Welcome to a very special episode of Horror Movie Yearbook. I am your host, Willie Gibbs, and with me is my wonderful co-host. No, my wonderful fellow host, not co-host.
I always screw that up, too.
You're a co-host tonight, I guess.
Well, technically, we're both co-hosts, right?
Right, yeah, I guess we co-host.
Right.
Mr. Tim Long.
Thank you.
Yes. We're here, very special episode. We're going to be doing a tribute on Tobe Hooper, the late, great Tobe Hooper, who unfortunately passed away in August of this year. We did a special on George Romero, and we're kind of going to follow suit here with Tobe. I think the difference here being that I think we're a little, I'd say I know for sure I'm a little less well-versed in Toby's catalog. I've seen most of his films, but there are a couple of, couple that I saw years ago and I just don't remember much of.
I have now seen more Tobe Hooper films than I haven't.
Okay.
But I've still got a couple holes in there.
I've got a couple too,
yeah.
For sure. And we're not covering every movie he ever made here. I mean, we'll touch on everything, but we're covering three in particular. Much like our Romero episode, we wanted to talk a little bit about kind of earlier Tobe Hooper, somewhere in the middle during his kind of rise to prominence, and then later on in his career. Let's kick things off right out of the gate. Favorite Tobe Hooper movie going into this? What was your favorite?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And it's a boring choice, but, and we talked about it on the podcast a few weeks back, it really is pretty perfect.
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing movie. It's an amazing early career movie for a director.
Sure.
It's one of the most dangerous feeling movies ever made, and it's pretty astounding.
It really is. It's a voice. Like, it's... That movie's a force of nature, and it changed a lot of people's outlooks on what could be achieved with, like, guerrilla filmmaking, you know, going out and kind of doing it yourself.
Right. It changed horror movies.
It did change horror movies,
yeah.
Absolutely. And it led to a lot of things we've seen since then. I mean, you know, I'd say the inspiration is dripping off of any of the, you know, most of the major horror movies that come out even now. There's a little bit of Texas Chainsaw in there most of the time.
Especially that filmmaking bunch are in like the mid-2000s.
The Splat Pack?
The Splat Pack.
Yeah.
You can see the influence of that movie on really all... I mean, Rob Zombie wouldn't have a directing career.
True.
If it wasn't for TCM,
true.
It seems. So.
Well, and I mean, I'd even go as far as to say found footage.
Yeah.
I'd go as far as to say Blair Witch Project because, well... Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not... It's also my favorite Hooper film going into this,
okay.
By the way. I have... Poltergeist is tricky. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But it might not be a found footage film, but it feels very much like a documentary. It feels... And that's just partially the low-budget, you know, filmmaking aspect of it all, but... It feels very found footage. It feels like you're watching something that you found that you shouldn't be watching. And that's really at its root what that subgenre is. So I think it's an inspiration for that stuff too, for sure.
Yeah. No, totally. It feels like a movie. It doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like something that's happening in front of you. And
yeah.
that's really hard to pull off.
Yep.
And for a horror movie to do that, it adds an extra layer of terrifying.
For sure. And we've talked in depth about Texas Chainsaw Massacre on our 1974 episode. So go back and check it out if you're interested in hearing kind of our extended thoughts on that. It was a fun episode, so check it out. And while you're checking out our older episodes, be sure to leave us a rating and review on iTunes.
Oh, for sure.
When you go back and download that old episode, just throw a little five star. Throw us a five star on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't be a jerk. Please don't give us a one star.
Yeah.
Even if you hate it. Just don't listen to us anymore.
Yeah, if you hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't listen and don't rate.
Yeah, or just don't rate. Yeah, that's fine. That's totally cool. Or lie and give us a five star anyway. We're cool with that too.
Yeah, we're cool. We're totally cool with lying.
What about the rest? Okay, so your favorite was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I agree. It was also my favorite. What about the rest of your kind of Toby Hooper experience? Where were you at? You said you had seen, now seen more than you haven't.
Yes.
What had you seen going into this?
Okay. I've seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which is another movie I like. We'll kind of discuss.
We're going to touch on these for sure, but I'm just curious to hear, like, what other ones, notable ones, were you able to check out?
Going in? Yeah, just Funhouse.
Funhouse, okay.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I had seen Eaten Alive before. It's been a long time. Okay. I've seen Poltergeist, but I had never seen Life Force, and I had never seen The Mangler.
Okay.
Honestly, I hadn't seen anything, because I still haven't seen Invaders from Mars. So really, it's the back half of his career that I am not familiar with. Weirdly enough, I've seen a few of his TV episodes.
Okay.
And I'm like
the Freddy's Nightmares one that he did.
The Freddy's Nightmares. The Tales from the Crypt, I remember vividly. That's the one with Whoopi Goldberg.
Yep.
And I think I've seen that Showtime backdoor pilot he did with Tyra Banks.
Okay.
And I can't remember who else is in it. But I think I have seen that before on cable. So I've seen a few of his TV shows, and I've seen like his Masters of Horror episodes.
Okay.
And the back half of Toby Hooper's career, like post Poltergeist, is really spotty.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah, no, and mostly is for me too. I mean, I have not seen Invaders from Mars. That's the one canon film he made I have not seen. I have not seen Spontaneous Combustion. I haven't seen Night Terrors. I've seen Body Bags. I've seen a lot of his TV.
Yep.
And I've seen most of the stuff, the same stuff you did. With the reverse of, I had never seen Eaten Alive. I had seen Life Force.
Okay.
So we have that kind of switcheroo.
And you had seen The Mangler.
I had, yes. Okay. On TV, super edited, but I had seen it at some point. So, cool. Well, that's awesome. So Toby Hooper kind of arrives on the scene. In 69, he directs his first film called Eggshells, which I am not familiar with.
I have not seen it either.
It's pre-Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I believe it was, very, very low budget, like borderline student film from my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not checked that out. I don't even know if it's really available. I don't know if it's something that you can really seek out on like a DVD or a Blu-ray or anything.
Yeah, from what I can tell. Yeah, I'm not even sure. I didn't even look it up, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the plot is experimental allegorical story about a group of hippie students in Austin, Texas who move into an old big house in the woods. However, something else is there and it's influencing them.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's an early, it's a feature film, though.
It is a feature film,
yeah. It seems kind of student filmy, right?
Experimental, maybe a little bit, like it says, yeah.
Yeah, maybe like a Dark Star, like with Carpenter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or even There's Always Vanilla with Romero. Yep. Although that was pretty feature, but
still,
you know what I mean.
Yeah. And then 74, he makes Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, I mean, his life changes completely. And like we said, the landscape of cinema, especially horror cinema, changes. 2 years after Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we'll get into our first movie. In 1976 is Eaten Alive. The synopsis for Eaten Alive says that a psychotic redneck who owns a dilapidated hotel in rural East Texas kills various people who upset him or his business, and he feeds their bodies to a large crocodile that he keeps as a pet in the swamp beside his hotel. That's a wordy... That is a much longer synopsis than this needs. They could have just gone with, like, redneck guy feeds people to a crocodile.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, people who visit his resort.
Yeah, he feeds them to a crocodile.
I call it a resort. It's like a terrible hotel.
Like, who would stay there?
Not the people in this movie.
No,
either.
These people seem pretty okay. Like
Robert Englund's character,
he would stay there. Like, he'd use it for like a. He's the kind of guy who rents out like the motel room by the hour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the family, I don't buy that.
Yeah, I guess we're just gonna get into this.
Yeah,
let's just get into it. So one of the issues with this movie is it's a little bit too coincidental.
Sure.
It all feels like you're right. That family would not pull over and stop there, and that motel would never have a night as busy as it does this night.
It's incredible.
Like just a random night.
It's incredible. Of course, the kindly black woman at the brothel, of course, is sending people over there.
Yeah, you're right.
Which seems horrible. Why are you doing that? Yeah, I mean, the husband of the family, I guess I can understand him making questionable decisions because he's a psycho.
Right.
What is wrong with that guy? Like, what's his character? What's the deal? Like, there's one point where he just goes, oh!
Yeah, he just breaks down and starts, like, moaning.
I don't...
Well, okay. So, with this movie, I think one of the negatives and positives,
okay,
weirdly, is Hooper's following up Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, he's trying to one-up that. And I think this is a theme throughout his career, too, is trying to find a way to top that.
To top his own...
early success that he had in TCM. And in this one, I will say this. It has that same feel of like, whoa, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Sure.
Like, it's another movie that he's made that there's an edge to it that makes it feel dangerous. And it's from that, it's from the first scene when, because they open with Buck, Robert Englund.
Getting kind of.
And he's, well, I mean, he's straight up, he's going to anally rape.
Yes.
A prostitute.
Yes.
And that's how he starts the movie.
Yes.
And so that's kind of, you kind of know what you're in for. You're like, whoa, if that's where we're starting, like, where are we going to go after this? Because you're starting pretty much, you're starting at the bottom of the barrel there.
Yeah, you're borderline starting where Texas Chainsaw Massacre ended, right?
Right. Right. So, and England for a young actor, this is excellent.
He's, you know what? Robert Englund's a good actor.
No, he is.
Like, I mean...
He can ham it up. He will later on tonight.
Sure, and yeah. I know we're not the first people to say, like, this is not, like, some sort of major revelation. The guy's done a ton of stage work and stuff, but, like, he's a good actor.
No, he is.
Yeah. It's almost... I'm happy he's Freddy Krueger, but it's almost sad in a way.
Right.
Because I think he could have been... I think he could have been, and I mean this as a compliment, like, a Steve Buscemi.
Uh-huh.
Or a Philip Seymour Hoffman, like a character actor that you love to see pop up in movies.
Right.
So
you still kind of do as a horror fan.
You do in the genre, but yeah. I
know exactly what you're saying. Yep.
It's too bad we probably aren't going to get a lot of England's dramatic stuff that he could have pulled off, I
right.
think. You know what I mean? I don't right. know. I'm thankful for Robert Englund, but I'm a little sad about it too.
No, and I think he's very good here. The movie itself, though, it kind of feels like it's trying to top Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It never really does.
Well, and how? I mean, think about it too. Like, how do you want up? What do you? How do you want up Leatherface? Right, a crocodile. That's how you like. That's what we're doing here. Yeah, yep. You're absolutely right. Like, this is we're gonna go nuts and we're gonna increase the body count. It's gonna be a little bloodier. But we're gonna throw a giant alligator or crocodile in the mix. Like, on paper, I can see how where the gears were turning there. Like, he's like, oh, this is how I want up myself. I'm gonna have him. Toss him into a crocodile's pit. Like, that makes sense to me. It's, I think the... I don't hate this movie.
Oh, I don't hate it either.
I don't. Yeah. And I feel bad, like, especially given the fact that this is a tribute to Tobe Hooper, I'd feel bad just crapping on this movie, and that's not what I'm trying to do. But I will say, this movie doesn't feel terribly... There's not a lot of passion behind what's happening on camera here.
Well, he left before principal photography was... He left the film.
Finished, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know the reason why?
I'm not sure of that.
Because I've read that part of the reason is the producers of the movie wanted more nudity in it. There's quite a bit of nudity in this.
There's a fair amount.
Yeah, there's a fair amount. And Tobe Hooper's like, no, I'm not going to make a softcore porn film
more than
here.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's no nudity in that movie.
There's no nudity, yeah. And he kind of, so yeah, that was kind of a breaking point.
I don't blame him.
No, me neither.
Because there were a lot of films around that time that, like, horror, there's a reason why horror, for a long time, now it's acceptable to be a horror fan for most people. Like, people don't, like, stick their noses up at you like you're, like, a lesser being for liking horror movies. But there was a time when, like, softcore porn and horror were, like, released by the same companies.
Yeah.
Were very much, like, VHS, like, well, even pre-VHS, but, like, very much, like, home video, like, you know, darlings. Like, they made a lot of money on that kind of thing. And they, oftentimes, those directors that, like, your Sean Cunninghams or your Wes Cravens made some... softcore stuff.
Right.
So I see the relation there, and I can see why maybe he, being in that time period, was like, I don't want to do that because I don't want to be associated with, even though he's not making a softcore porno, I can see why he would say that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's like, I don't want to be roped in with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's funny. I didn't know that. I knew that he had left, though. But
yes. And that's kind of a thing. Hooper, I don't think, other than TCM, I don't think he had final cut on a movie until, I think, The Mangler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he had final cut on any of his movies.
And just reading his history and stuff, I wouldn't go... He seems like a very laid-back guy.
You're right.
But I feel like maybe on set, he was a bit of a malcontent. Because there's a couple productions he kind of took off.
Right.
So, who knows? I mean, I don't know what he was dealing with, but you don't see a lot of directors who split.
He seems like someone that might not work best in the system.
Yes. And we've talked about other...
He has money issues with films. They go over budget. Mm-hmm. I know my man from, Gunnar Hansen has talked about how he only made like $2,000 from the original. He's written about it. He did an interview, I think, with like People Magazine talking about it too. So then there were a lot of actors that felt that they got stiffed. And I don't think that's on Hooper. I think that's more on the production company and the people after the bigwigs, but it's also it's kind of a recurring theme, the kind of money issues he would run into.
He had
kind of a tough career
areas. Absolutely. No, you're right. You know, there are a lot of parallels to draw with him and some of his contemporaries.
Romero
would be
a lot of
a little bit of Carpenter, but this movie is, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, very loosely based on an actual story.
Yep.
Joe Ball, known as the Bluebeard from South Texas or the Alligator Man from Elmendorf, Texas. Sometime after Prohibition ended, he had a bar with an alligator pit. It was like an attraction for the folks to come see this alligator.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of women got murdered, and he was a suspect. And apparently... The rumor was he was feeding them to the alligator.
Yeah.
He killed himself before he was arrested. So, you know, maybe he was guilty. I don't know. We don't know. But just an interesting story.
Do you know what his hotel is called?
I don't.
The Sociable Inn.
Oh, wow. Interesting. There's a place called the Sociable Inn with an alligator pit.
Right.
Wow. That's interesting.
Texas, man.
It's Texas, dude.
Yeah.
The cinematographer, also touching on the Hooper malcontent stuff, he directed actually plenty of scenes in this film because of Hooper leaving.
Mm-hmm.
He went and I believe it was Robert Caramico. I'm sorry if I'm butchering that name, but he directed a lot of the movie, too. So, interesting, especially when we get to briefly talk about Poltergeist a little bit and all the... I'm sure everybody that's listening is aware of the hubbub about that. But, yeah, you know, final thoughts for me, and I don't know what else you would like to talk about in regards to Eaten Alive, but for me, I mean, it's not a great movie. For me to sit here and tell you, like, boy, this is a classic, and it's not. I wouldn't even go as far as to say, like, seek this one out. I wouldn't. I think there are plenty of other better Tobe Hooper movies, and he probably would have agreed. But if you're looking for something kind of crazy and out there from this time period, this is not a bad one to choose if you got a couple friends and some beers and you're just hanging out and, like, laughing at the insanity of it all.
It's a nice... It really is kind of a nice companion piece to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It is. Yeah. I personally would have a hard time watching them back-to-back because there's so much screaming in both of them.
The second half of this movie, there is very little dialogue.
That's a trend in Tobe Hooper films.
Yes. Yeah, TCM 2.
Is
the ultimate in screaming.
Pipes on that woman.
Oh, my God.
Unreal. That's how I feel on it. I mean... I'm not going to tell you to go check it out. I'm not going to dissuade you from it. I think with the right group of people that you're watching it with, maybe under the right inebriation level, you could have some fun with it.
Yes. The only other thing that I wanted to touch on before we move on is Judd, the main character.
Sure, the guy
owner
who
of
feeds
the inn,
people
to the alligator. Mm-hmm. I think if this were a better movie And I'm with you. I'm kind of like half. I'm like half and half on it. I think it's a more interesting movie than it is anything else. Especially,
like, we've watched a lot of good movies on this, so this is not really. This is probably the worst movie we've reviewed on the show.
No.
No.
Are we counting Fight the Franchise?
I don't like. I think of like our standard.
Okay.
Well, what would be worse?
Any of the Dollmans.
Okay, yeah.
Or the Puppet Masters or whatever. What did we watch? Demonic Toys.
Yeah, those are worse. You're right.
Yeah.
So, if we count Fight the Franchise, those are worse. But I would say in our standard episodes, this is the weakest of the bunch.
I think there's a weaker one coming up, too.
But we've watched a lot of good stuff, so I'm not trying
to... No, and I don't think this is bad. I don't think this is a bad movie. But I think it's... I'm not as crazy about the second half. But Judd, I want to talk about Judd. It's a companion piece to, I think, a little bit to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because they're both products of their time, and Judd is he's a Vietnam War vet.
Clearly.
Yeah. And I think with a better movie, Judd would be one of kind of the iconic horror villains, because he's got a really cool like lair.
He's got a cool lair. He's got like a kind of an iconic weapon, right? He's got a scythe.
Yep.
He's got a pet alligator.
That scythe kill is rough. Yeah. He's got a pet alligator, yes.
That's something the most slashers can.
He's got like when you go around his lair, his hotel, he's got like artifacts from people he's killed behind him, and that's a really cool touch.
Yeah.
I think the design of the hotel is really cool.
Oh, I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Cool.
I wonder how much of this movie not working is because Hoover left.
That could be a big part of it.
But I do think the Vietnam War angle is interesting, because he touches on it a little bit in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of playing into it. This one, I think it's an interesting, he is, because there have been quite a few studies about like war veterans and PTSD and kind of sex. And anytime Judd sees sex in this movie, he gets enraged.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what sets him off. Like anything sexual in this movie, he kind of goes nuts about.
Yeah.
And there is an intersection with like aggression and sexual behavior. And in a lot of war veterans, I mean, there has been some effects on certain things. So it's an interesting angle to explore for this type of movie, and I was kind of interested in that.
You want to see a perfect example in film of the tie between war and combat and in particular the Vietnam War and kind of sexual aggression. It's a much better made film than this, and I would argue that it's more horrifying than most anything we've talked about. It's a movie called Casualties of War,
mm-hmm.
with Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn, and I'm not going to suggest to just anybody go out and watch this, because it's not easy to watch. Maybe get an idea of what you're getting into before you watch it, I think, would be a good idea.
Yeah.
But there's a perfect example. I mean, there's a tie there for sure.
I mean, it's not completely. I don't want to say it's not uncommon, but it's like it is something like. For a soldier to get aroused while he's in battle.
Sure.
Like, that is something that happens.
Sure.
And I think that's fascinating when it comes to Judd, too.
It is kind of fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fear boner, man.
Right.
Or rage boner, maybe.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, cool. So let's before we jump into the second movie of our show here, I want to talk just some Tobe Hooper facts, just some basic stuff. This is mostly pulled from IMDb, so, you know, if it's not true, then I apologize. To anybody listening. Born on January 25th, 1943 in Austin, Texas. So Texas native. Gotta like that. And, of course, passed away August 26th of this year in L.A. From natural causes, which is it's kind of a pleasant thing to hear.
Yeah, right.
Toby's birth name was Willard Tobe Hooper. I like that.
Willard.
Yeah, I got a friend, a childhood friend, who still calls me Willard. You know him. Three films. Toby made three films for Canon. Are you familiar with Canon?
Yes.
I know the answer to that. Delightful documentary on Canon Films. I'm not going to go into full details about what Canon was. Let's just say it was a low-budget movie studio that pumped out movies like nobody's business. Think like a Charles Band borderline.
Like, what were some of the movies?
We're talking Missing in Action.
Missing in Action.
Invasion USA.
Over the Top, the Stallone movie was Canon.
Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren. Yep. lots of good stuff, lots of classy stuff. But there's a documentary about them. I was on Netflix for a while. I don't know if it still is. I believe it's called Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, and, I think so too.
Because they made the Breakin' films as
Breakin'
well.
Breakin' 2, yep.
And anyway, so Tobe Hooper, after the success of Poltergeist, they were like, we need Tobe Hooper to come in and make movies for us. Like, look at what he did with Poltergeist. And the agreement, from my understanding, was that one of those films had to be a sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. A lot like a deal that Romero had struck in another parallel with another production company for three films, with the agreement that one be a Dawn of the Dead sequel.
Mm-hmm.
So these two, there's the parallels continue here. And they were both, they both smartly saved that film for last, knowing that if that film was first and
yeah.
didn't do well, then they might dump the contract. So
yeah.
smart guys. Those three films were Life Force, which we're going to be talking about next, Invaders from Mars, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I haven't seen Invaders from Mars. I've seen bits. What a trio.
Invaders from Mars is a remake, right?
Yes.
Yep.
It's nothing like the original, though. Mm-hmm. Not really. There's some cool monsters in it. Yeah, none of them did well at the box office. And that's kind of what transitioned Tobe Hooper mostly into TV after that point. Speaking of TV that Toby directed, we have the video for Dancing with Myself by Billy Idol.
Yes, I saw that too.
Kind of fun.
Yep.
Toby was inducted into the inaugural class of the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival Hall of Fame. That was in 05. That was in Tempe, Arizona. Pretty cool.
Back to the Billy Idol thing, too.
Sure.
He was like one of the first like name directors to direct a music video. There were directors that would transition from music video
to film,
but he was one of the first like film directors
to jump to a music video.
And he did a Cars video, too, that I do not, like the band The Cars.
That's very cool.
Yep.
That's very neat. Yeah, and I mean, later on, it would get so big. I mean, when did Thriller come out? Do you remember what year Thriller came out?
Yeah,
that was Landis.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Oh, Thriller might have been like 82, 83.
I can't. I'm weirdly enough not good with
that. No, me neither.
With that.
With the years.
on our show that revolves around it. Hooper was originally offered the script for E.T. Shot it down, though. At that point, Spielberg was like, well, maybe you can do Poltergeist. Spielberg had written Poltergeist, wanted to direct it, arguably did. And then Spielberg was working on E.T., Hooper would work on Poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like John Hughes did that a lot. He'd write two scripts each year. He had two scripts produced each year. He'd direct one and somebody else directed another.
Oh, cool.
And then the only other thing I saw in here that was kind of interesting, unlike his contemporaries, George Romero, Wes Craven, who always kind of wanted to work outside the horror genre, but kind of got shoehorned into staying in that genre,
mm-hmm.
Hooper was always attracted to the genre, sci-fi horror. That was what he wanted to be in. So mm-hmm. I find that's one big difference between him. And I would say even Carpenter didn't necessarily always... I don't think he's ever come out and said, like, I didn't want to be in the horror genre forever, but I think he's stated in the past that...
Yeah, no, totally. He has... I've read a couple interviews with him, and he's always wanted to make westerns,
mm-hmm.
But he kind of does that in his horror
kind
movies
of.
Anyway.
He finds a way to still
make it. He finds a way to theatrically. And I remember in one interview, he always... Like, his dream was to, like, make a big Hollywood musical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wanted to make a musical movie. So.
He could do it.
No, he totally could.
Totally could. But, yeah, so that's just a few facts about Toby. I thought those are kind of fun. You ready to kind of move into transition to the next movie here?
Yeah, are we going to talk about the Salem's Lot and stuff?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
For sure. So this is, I kind of called this section of his career his mainstream success, and I would argue that this is the... Poltergeist is the peak of his mainstream success.
Yes.
So in 79, we've got Salem's Lot, which is a TV movie, an adaptation of the Stephen King novel.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty well regarded still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
King approves of it too, doesn't
yes.
he? Yeah.
I think he's even stated that he finds some of the things are more effective. The changes mm-hmm. are the changes he made to the story, I think King was like, no, that was good for the film.
Right.
So.
And yeah, it's a very, it's got a sense of style to it that mm-hmm. you don't see in a lot of, he's not the only one of, because Craven and Carpenter both did TV movies too. But he's not the only bigger name horror director to do a TV movie, but It does have a certain sense of style that you didn't get. And you still don't get in a lot of TV.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Salem's Lot was originally, I think we've talked about this before, was supposed to be theatrical.
Okay.
Romero was attached.
Oh, yep.
And when they said, no, we're going to do it for TV, that's when Romero jumped ship. And I would argue this could have been released in theaters. I think it's strong enough. 2 years later, in 81, we get The Funhouse, which is, it's a fun movie, I think.
Yeah, I like Funhouse.
That was one of the earlier Hooper movies I saw. It's kind of his entry in the slasher genre,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I think it's unique enough. The setting's unique. You're in a carnival. I think the killer is kind of spooky. There's a couple killers, actually. So it's a little more Texas Chainsaw, scary redneck-y type vibe.
Yes.
It's got a lot of the Toby Hooper, the aesthetic you come to expect, but it's got a cool setting and it's got a creepy atmosphere throughout. There's a really cool opening credit sequence that really unnerves you from the get go. Even if it does get a little bit into generic slasher territory sometimes, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if I recall, it wasn't like a huge hit when it came out, but it cleaned up. I think he's even talked about it cleaned up in like home video.
Yeah, well, and this was the year of the slasher.
We've
talked about 1981 in the past. This was not a movie we included in that group, I don't
right.
think. But this was in there right with the big kind of Friday the 13th,
mm-hmm.
not ripoffs, but imitators in some ways. So this one does something different, at least.
Right.
And then 82, we got the big one, Poltergeist. Poltergeist is kind of a film that even non-horror fans are familiar with.
Yeah, my parents would watch Poltergeist. My parents still quote Poltergeist, and they're not horror fans.
Yeah.
But they'll say they're here all the time.
Yeah. My mom will always, she used to, when she finished cleaning up like around the house, or like we'd finish cleaning up around the house, like, you know, my brother and stuff, she'd like say like, this house is clear. I always thought that was funny as a kid. Yeah, and we won't harp on it too much, but you guys are probably aware of, there's a bit of a controversy revolving around who actually directed Poltergeist, because on paper, in the credits, it was Toby Hooper.
Mm-hmm.
He was on set.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But though Spielberg, once again, in the credits, only wrote this film, it very much feels like a Spielberg film.
And there are a ton of behind-the-scenes pictures, and a lot of the promotional material around the time was centered around Spielberg. And you can see in pictures that he's on set directing. And then what's weird is it's a controversy among maybe like fans and journalists, but it was never really a controversy between those two guys.
They always seem to get along fine.
They always got along fine, yeah.
I think it was a matter of, this is just me from what I've heard. Hooper was hired because Spielberg liked his previous stuff enough to say, this guy's a horror director.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to do E.T., so I'll do E.T. He'll do the thing that's more in vain for him. I can trust him to be on set and make sure stuff doesn't fall apart. And because I can't spend all of my time on set, I can make sure he can give me the vision I want for this.
Right.
And Spielberg was on set a lot of the time, and when he couldn't be there, Hooper basically shot his vision. Because honestly, the most damning evidence of the whole thing is this does not feel like a Toby Hooper movie.
there are
moments,
and
it makes me wonder if those moments were perhaps when Spielberg was not around,
like when the older characters. Isn't there a scene in this one where like they smoke weed?
Mm-hmm.
Like that doesn't feel like a Spielberg thing. Mm-hmm. That feels more, if I were going to guess, like a Hooper thing.
The face melting off.
Yes,
a little more Toby Hooper.
Yeah, yeah. My theory.
Mm.
Well, okay, so the dude that directed Wish Upon, and I can't remember his name right there. His brother was actually the DP for Poltergeist. And the guy that directed Wish Upon, he was on Shockwaves, and they asked him, like, what's the deal here? Do you know anything? And he said that, I got the exact quote. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on, and candidly, Steven Spielberg directed that movie. There's no question. However, Toby Hooper, I adore. And I love that man so much. So he basically, I mean, he says Spielberg directed it. Now, I mean, that's one person
sure.
saying it. My theory on the thing is I'm kind of in line with you. I think there was a little bit going on around the time legally with like stuff like the Writers Guild. There was an issue with Spielberg having two movies in production like
okay.
that. at the same time. I'm kind of with you. I think Spielberg probably directed, had more of a creative say than Hooper did.
But
I would tend to think that there are elements of Hooper that made it. It feels more like a Spielberg movie.
For sure.
So I wouldn't doubt that he directed most of it. But I do think that Hooper definitely had creative head.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, he was on set. Like, there's no denying that. The guy was there.
Right.
So he was involved. It's just, that's one of the reasons we didn't pick Poltergeist. We wanted to make sure we picked movies that were purely.
And I think we'll probably talk about Poltergeist at some point.
I think we will.
When we get to that year.
As its own piece.
Yeah. Because I really, really do like Poltergeist, no matter who directed it. Actually, I think it's cooler if they both directed it. Because if you get Steven Spielberg and the dude that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre together, that's pretty sweet.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It kind of is.
All right. Well, that brings us a few years later to the first of Tobe Hooper's canon films, Life Force from 1985. The IMDb synopsis is much more streamlined than Eaten Alive. It's actually a sentence. Which is funny because this is a very complicated movie.
This is a very complicated movie.
A race of space vampires arrive in London and infect the populace.
Yeah, boy, that's cutting to the chase, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what Eaten Alive's synopsis should have done. Life Force is canon films in all their insanity and awesomeness. Because I love canon movies.
Yeah.
But they're crazy.
Yeah.
Goal and Globus were crazy people.
Yeah.
Still are. And in fact, when they heard that documentary was being made about them, they decided to start making their own documentary about themselves. Classic. Anyway.
So good.
It's so perfect. They decided, let's hire the guy who did Poltergeist. Sounds pretty smart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just let him go nuts.
Yeah. There's no way they knew him from anything other than Poltergeist. Maybe Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that was... Yeah, you know, you're right.
But they wanted the Poltergeist guy.
They wanted Poltergeist.
And I bet they called him the Poltergeist guy. And basically, this is Tobe Hooper saying, I'm going to make the horror version of Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's going to be big. Like, the scale is going to be big. It's going to be like the Ben-Hur of horror.
Yeah.
And boy, does he do it.
Well, it's based on a book.
It is. The Space Vampire.
The Space Vampire. What a title.
I know, right?
I have never read the book.
I have not.
But I have read the book. Pump your brakes a little bit from what I've read. From what I've read, it's very dry, and it tends to focus on a lot of intellectual back and forth between
that
characters.
That almost is funnier to me. Like, I'd read it just to laugh.
Well, and was it a... It's not a Quatermass novel, though, right? But it's...
No.
It's inspired.
Yeah.
And Hooper and... this is the movie that has the most parallels to Carpenter, to me.
110%.
Because
you're absolutely right.
Carpenter was a big fan of the Quatermass novels, which were written by Nigel Neal. They're British, like, science fiction.
Yep.
Novels.
And he Prince of Darkness had a lot to do with his love for those.
Halloween 3 was when he got to work with the author, Nigel Neal, and it was not a good experience for him. It was a bit of a letdown. But they were both... It's funny, you go back and you look, and they have... Carpenter and him have that in common. They both are fans of that, and this is kind of in that vein. This is him getting to make his Quatermass movie in Prince of Darkness. This has a lot in common with Prince of Darkness, but they...
it really does.
It does.
Yeah.
But like, he's a big fan of EC Comics as well. Which, honestly, Eaten Alive and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he's even said, I think, both of them were inspired heavily by EC Comics.
Okay.
Educational comics with their car. They did a lot of, like, Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that. But Romero was a big... That influenced Romero, that influenced Carpenter, Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of these... 50 science fiction had a big influence on him, too, from what I've read.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was big on kind of that classical... You know, like flying saucers stuff too.
Yeah. Yep. And you can see that all over. And 100%. That had a big. So you can see this generation of filmmakers, especially those guys and writers with King, the influence, they wear their influences on their sleeves. And you can see it all over this one. This is kind of his influences all over the screen.
Yep.
As far as what I think of this movie, I kind of love it.
Yeah.
First time I had seen it, by the way.
That is awesome to me.
Yeah.
Like, that makes me really happy. That makes me really happy. You loved it? Like, loved it.
I really did. And there are some things, it's weird. There are some things thematically that feel really dated and kind of like, oh, what are you doing there? much like Prince of Darkness in some ways. There
Absolutely.
Is, the whole thing is an AIDS metaphor. Kind of jumping from body to body.
Yeah.
And there is quite a bit of it being tied to same sex.
Yep.
Sexual contact.
Yep.
It doesn't just limit that, though.
No,
there's, it's more, this is, because Prince of Darkness has that too, honestly.
No, and there's some stuff going on there. We
there's
talked
some
about
stuff
that,
going
yeah.
on, yeah. And they're both products of their time. And I think you have to meet a movie halfway sometimes. And you don't necessarily have to agree with what the
You
movie,
don't have to love, even like what's being said,
no.
necessarily. But you also have to. You have to understand when a movie was made.
Right.
And I'm not, like, look, if it was like, I'm not talking about Birth of a Nation. Like, if this is like,
yeah, right.
if this is like blatant hate speech, I'd
right.
be like, no, I don't care when it was made. It's terrible. This is like an allegory for real fears that were going on at the time.
This is, yes, it's using the fears of the time
yes.
and it's presenting in the horror movie. And it's not limiting it to same sex, but it is there.
No, for sure.
It is there.
Yes.
So you have to kind of see that for what it was. And I don't love that aspect of it, but I do find it fascinating
mm-hmm.
To get in that mindset. But it's more about this is a very conservative sexually. It's a sexually conservative film in a lot of ways because, yeah, it really comes across like an anti-promiscuity.
Well, yeah, I mean you've got a beautiful naked woman.
Yes.
And when I say naked, like, I mean naked and spends the majority of her screen time naked, wandering around through the sets
mm-hmm.
and through the scenery and, like, corrupting
everybody through bodily contact.
By kissing them, usually.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So it's very much focused on the consequences of just having sex with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And... That is that's something that is prevalent in, I think, a lot of horror movies, and so this is no exception. I think, though, what makes this movie work best for me is the opening is amazing.
Really cool, right?
Oh, my gosh. The set design and that's the other, like, the bodies, when you see them, they're all emaciated and
yep.
stuff, too. So that's another thing that's interesting when it comes to that. But the set design is amazing. There are a ton of vaginas in this movie. Everything looks like a vagina
yep.
in this movie.
There's a lot of vagina imagery.
There really is.
Who's the painter that, the female painter that is very famous for painting basically vaginas?
No, I don't know.
They're like flowers, but they're really vaginas. I'll look it up.
Please look it up.
Yeah.
Please look it up. But it starts off like a straightforward science fiction horror movie, or as straightforward as you get. It's like vampires in space. And then about 30 minutes in, it turns into a mystery movie. And it's like that for the next hour or so. And then all of a sudden, he switches it up and it turns into a zombie movie.
Yeah, and that part, I have to say, I don't know if that's in the book or not. I'm not legitimately not sure. That to me seems like a mandated, like, Golden Globus. That's like probably the one time they were like, we need the vampires. That's my weird impression of Golden Globes.
Right. You know what? I think it is an addition.
It has to be, right?
Yes, it is.
Georgia O'Keeffe is the painter.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of Georgia O'Keeffe going around in this. Sorry about that.
But even that, because that's actually probably, I kind of like the mystery of the science fiction stuff better than the zombie stuff, but even that's fun because it's Tobe Hooper riffing on George Romero.
Well, and really, does that not follow a template that we still see today for big blockbuster movies? That, like, even if a movie's a little more subdued, maybe moving throughout, like but it always builds to some sort of giant, like, cataclysmic event, and everything gets out of control, and the scale gets huge, and there's explosions, and there's people running through the streets. Like, this is every, like, superhero movie, right?
Pretty much.
There's a portal in the sky.
Yeah. There's not as much nudity.
No.
In superhero movies.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of nudity in this. She's naked a lot of
There's
it,
a
so.
Couple of naked gentlemen.
There are a couple of naked gentlemen.
Yep.
Yes.
Which,
yeah, it's a very, for a movie as with the elements that it has thematically, it's a very sexual film.
It sure is. Yeah. I mean,
and it also, it ends in a cathedral. Like it ends.
It does.
It ends with them finding.
And they're kind
sanctuary.
Of they're having sex in the
yeah,
cathedral.
They have sex in the cathedral.
And then they're like sucked up into heaven, right?
There is a lot to chew on there.
Yeah.
In this entire movie. But it, I honestly had a ton of fun. As I've grown older, mm-hmm. I tend to, and this is why I don't, even a couple of the movies that, even some movies that I dislike, I don't outright hate. Like, Eaten Alive, I'm not crazy about, but I don't hate Eaten Alive. Because
it takes a lot for me to hate a movie.
It what it takes for me nowadays, most of the time, is when I see someone making a movie and I can tell they're not trying. Like, at all.
Like Kevin Smith.
Well, I'll say this: he tried with Tusk.
No, he did. I'm just joking.
The Yoga Hosers, but yeah, the one that comes to mind of recently that we've watched is that Dollman versus Demonic Toys.
Yeah,
like
no,
half other movies, but that's what kind of annoys me when these people who are doing stuff that people dream about.
And they're wasting it on.
They're just not even bothering. Yeah. Sometimes I think it's funny. Don't get me wrong. I've laughed.
Laziness can be funny, especially like later in a career.
Especially, yeah.
If you
put your work in, yeah.
But if like...
If Carpenter like just cashes a check, maybe the ward, probably.
What do I care?
I don't care. Carpenter has given me enough.
Yeah.
But
he's earned to phone it in.
You cannot, and I don't think you can level this at any of Tobe Hooper's movies. You cannot level that complaint at this movie at all.
It's ambitious.
This movie is trying so hard.
It's big, dude.
And you can, and there are the critical reaction to this is very split. People mm-hmm. either love it or hate it. I fall in the love it camp, but I can totally see people hating it because it is so weird and so ambitious. And so, but man, it looks good too.
It does.
It holds up really well.
Yeah, it's like a well-made movie.
He could shoot a movie when he had the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could shoot a movie. Yeah. He's a good director.
Yes, absolutely.
And John Dykstra, who special effects guy, I believe he did the Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I think at least the first one.
Yeah, I believe so.
But a special effects man. He worked on this movie. It was I think one of his early movies.
Earlier one.
Yep. Yep.
It's very cool. You know, it's a movie, man.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
I like it a lot. I'm a big fan. It's insane. I mean, like I don't really know. I mean, I know what's going on, but none of it really makes any actual sense, but I'm cool with it.
Right.
Like, I don't care.
It's kind of you have to let it wash over you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I...
There are vampires. You know there are vampires running around.
Yes. They turn people into zombies. There's vampires... Alien vampires that make zombies. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, you don't... It's tough to get a grasp on the specifics of what exactly is occurring.
I don't need to know the science. Yeah, I enjoy... I like it a lot. I do. First time I saw it, I was like, what is...
Oh, that score, too.
What did I just watch? Oh, it's great.
At the beginning.
This is the weirdest blockbuster ever made.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was a blockbuster.
This was meant to be like... Canon Films
insane.
Big blockbuster film as was Masters of the Universe.
It did not turn out well for them financially.
It did not. No.
That score real quick.
Mm-hmm.
NFL Films, they used to run these they used to put together like video VHSs,
yeah.
Or they have shows on ESPN and they would have this music, and anybody who's an NFL fan can kind of like remember the music, like it was like that. It was
sure.
Very pulsing. There was one piece of music, and I looked it up. It's slightly different, but I swear, because they're making these NFL films probably a little bit after Life Force, they watch Life Force. Whoever composed the NFL films music watched Life Force.
That's
and,
awesome.
And like was inspired and kind of ripped off the main theme from this.
That's amazing.
The main theme from this is so good.
Oh,
it's,
totally.
It's like Waxwork put out any sort of, or like any of these record companies, I would totally buy it.
I'm not sure. It's a cool score, though. Oh, let's see. Wow, that was weird. I'm sorry, I just burped in the microphone, I think. I had Burger King before we started this.
Yeah, that's Willie's go-to before.
Yeah. And it never sits well, so I don't know why I keep doing it, because it's close to your house.
It's right next to it.
So,
I never get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you're around it, you don't want it.
Yeah.
Tobe Hooper's director's cut was 128 minutes. Film was cut down to 116. Mostly scenes set on the spaceship were cut. The original unedited European version contains more violent and erotic footage, which was cut from the domestic U.S. version. Also contains the full Henry Mancini score in place of the occasional Michael Kamen music cues placed at the last minute for U.S. prints. This version is now available on video and runs 116 minutes.
Yep, that's the version I watched. Yeah.
Yep, me too. I think. Sir Patrick Stewart's in this film.
He is. This is his mid-80s science fiction bombs, mm-hmm. period, because he was also in Dune around this time. he's really good at it, too, though.
Yeah.
He has said, I got a Patrick Stewart quote. He said this about Toby Hooper, so I wanted to bring it up. It was very nice. Toby Hooper was a director to whom I felt the closest. I liked him very much, and I admired his work. Life Force was one of the best experiences I had as an actor.
That's awesome.
Right?
Also, his first on-screen kiss.
Yes.
With Steve Railsback.
It was Steve Railsback.
Beautiful.
He's kissed Ian McKellen many times.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Most
they love each other.
Yep.
Yeah. It's great. It's a beautiful relationship.
No, he's really good at this.
No, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
In even the small part
he's in. And then he goes out like a champ.
He does. Oh, my God.
Spewing blood everywhere.
His death is so funny.
Oh, yeah.
He dies. Spoiler.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert. Toby Hooper almost lost one of his ears while he was shooting this film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the cold of the English moors that they were filming on, he almost froze his ear off. You know who's considered for one of the male vampires, the nude male vampires?
No.
Billy Idol.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine?
Man, that would have been like a kind of a thing to do. Well, Sting was in Dune.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of Bowie in The Hunger.
But. Yeah. Here's a fun one. The dummies that for the corpses in this film, okay? So like the corpses that they've opened up and taken a look at and stuff. Do you know what film they were used in 14 years later?
No.
The Mummy with Brendan Fraser. So there's Life Force corpses in
good
the Mummy.
Good for Cannon for making some money off those
there
corpses.
There you go. Yeah. Selling them off. And then this is pretty obvious, but I thought it was kind of fun. A lot of parallels with the Dracula story, the original Dracula story here. The vampire comes to Earth in a ship. In the original story, of course, it's a ship, like a vessel, a boat, and he's traveling the sea. This, of course, they're traveling through space. The crew of the ship is wiped out, just like when Dracula comes to Britain on a sailing ship. It takes refuge in a religious temple, creates a special link with a victim it's shared its essence with, who is later hypnotized to provide clues to its location. And the team hunting it include a foreign-sounding doctor obsessed with death, and an American who can track it to a mental asylum, who tracks it to a mental asylum while it spreads its plague through London. The vampire is eventually killed by the American using a knife who dies himself in the process. So, but yeah, it's like it's Dracula. which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Life Force is awesome. You need to watch Life Force. If you haven't seen Life Force, we got a lot of likes on our tweet about Life Force, and that makes me happy.
Yeah,
that means that there's a lot of others out there who are like, you need to watch Life Force.
Yeah, it seems to be getting discovered more and more.
Yeah, and there's a Scream Factory Blu-ray.
Oh, I might buy that.
Yeah, it's really sweet. The cover's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, so check that out.
It was, we should mention, it was not a box office success. It came out around the same time as The Thing and E.T.
Yep.
So it kind of met the same fate that The Thing did when it came to E.T.
Yeah.
Which is everybody's like, no, we like...
We want this.
We will like E.T.
Yeah.
Toby Hooper has, in an interview with Shock Till You Drop in 2015, he said he didn't like it at first. After he made it, then he watched it. He said he went through a horrible breakup, and he came home, and Life Force was on TV, and he sat and watched it, and he goes, "Wow, this is one of my favorite films." And the interviewer was like, "Oh, is this one of your favorite films you made?" And he goes, "No, this is one of my favorite films ever." So he's
how awesome is that?
He did not even live it. I really do appreciate there's no false modesty there. He's like, "No, this is one of my favorite movies.
I made one of my favorite movies." That's so cool. How cool is that?
So this was kind of Toby had, even with Eaten Alive thrown in there, he had a bit of a hot streak going through Poltergeist, because even Funhouse had found success financially on video, and this was kind of the beginning of the downfall.
It was, yeah. I mean, it's tough to talk about and call it a downfall, but in a lot of ways, it was. I mean. This is where his return to small budget stuff starts
happening. That's what I mean, yeah.
In 86, we've got Invaders from Mars. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 also came out in 86. So he finishes out his Canon contract. And we don't see another movie from him for 4 years until 1990's Spontaneous Combustion, which I've never seen.
No, well, just to back up real quick to TCM2, sure. What do you think of TCM2? Because I love it.
I don't know. I have to rewatch it because I've seen it a couple times, and like I, it's hard for me to say I love it because it's such a miserable experience. You know what I mean?
I find it really funny. Like, I think it's a really good dark comedy.
Like, it's like there's parts of it that I really like, but then there's parts I'm like, I don't know if I ever want to watch that.
It's got a great song by Danny Elfman's band, Oingo Boingo, called No One Lives Forever. Mm-hmm. The song is awesome. Just download that if you don't want to watch it.
Yeah, or Dead Man's Party. It's really good,
too.
But yeah, I do like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, too. I just don't like watching it often.
Right. No, I agree with you. It is an endurance test, especially when she starts screaming.
Oh, it's amazing.
Dennis
Hopper...
He screams a lot, too. He chews it up.
His character named Lefty.
I think he got most of the budget for that film.
I'm sure. But that was classic canon stuff.
Savini was the effects guy, too, if I remember.
Oh, yeah. That's classic canon move, though, is like we're going to get Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, because they didn't get Gunnar Hansen back, did they?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. No. I think you got Dennis Hopper.
There you go. Yeah, so Spontaneous Combustion in 90.
You ever seen that?
I have not.
Yeah, I think we touched on that. I have not seen it either, but everything I heard says it's like incoherent.
Okay, cool. Night Terrors in 1993.
Nope.
And then he does a segment of John Carpenter's Body Bags in 93 called The Eye, or Eye.
Yeah, which is a good segment.
Yep. And then a lot of TV that I'm not going to read all of it off before we get to our final film.
Okay.
So, very busy still, but a transition kind of back to lower budget fare, and then even further deciding to kind of get some work in TV where he had consistent work. So
I was going
to
say, it's kind of a cool lesson, which is things aren't working for you. Like they weren't working
Change
for
it
him.
Up.
Change it up, go do some TV. And he found success in TV.
Yeah. And obviously the landscape's different now. Now oftentimes it's better to be in TV.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you still see like Ty West does episodes of Scream. And I think he did an episode of the Exorcist TV show this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You see,
that's the way it should be. You got to freshen yourself a little bit. Sometimes you don't want to make your own story. Sometimes you just want to direct something.
To touch on Kevin Smith, some of the best things he's done in the second half recently, some of the best things he's done is on TV when he does the superhero shows.
Absolutely.
He does the DC shows. He does a great job on those.
Sometimes it is weirdly refreshing and good for a creator to see somebody else's work through. There's nothing wrong with that. Some of the best work I've seen Neil Marshall do was on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he personally kills it on Game of Thrones. Ernest Dickerson still gets work on TV, and he's awesome at it from everything. Yeah, he did like The Wire and...
Does a bunch of Walking Dead, too.
Walking Dead, yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Yep.
All right, our final film of our trio of Toby is The Mangler, based on a Stephen King story. Probably not one you've ever read. It's about a laundry folding machine that's possessed by a demon, which causes it to develop homicidal tendencies. That's about right. There's a lot more going on here. This is another film where Tobe Hooper was replaced in the middle of production.
Yep.
Or towards the end of production by Anant Singh. So how much of this is Toby's? I think majority of it is.
Yeah.
I think chunks of it maybe are not. This is not a well-known... This is not an It or a Carrie. This is not a household Stephen King name, right? There's a reason why that's the case. Strangely enough, this has two sequels.
Right.
But I don't think...
I remember that.
They're very tangentially related to this. But this is not good. Like, this is not a good story. Like, this is like Stephen King at his worst,
I think,
right?
I've read it. I read the story. Is it in Graveyard Shift?
I think so.
But the thing is, like, I barely remember. It's like seriously like 20 pages long.
Right.
It's just a short story about a killer laundry machine.
That eats
it's fine. I mean,
but it's one of those things. When people make fun of Stephen King, they often tend to go to the, I have a new book coming out. It's this, but it's haunted. Right? Because he's known as like the let's make cars haunted.
Right.
Let's make you know what I mean? Like he's done a haunted hotel. He's done a haunted car. He's known for taking the everyday and making it evil and spooky. Right.
Right. That's kind of his thing. Yeah.
It's his thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes it works.
This is pretty funny though. This is a laundry machine.
Yeah. This.
I mean, it's not your washer or dryer. Right? Like, it's not like your Whirlpool. This
no,
is like an
industrial laundry. laundry.
Press, right? Yeah. But it's still, at its core, this is a film about a killer laundry machine. I want you to think about that for a second.
Yeah, no, I thought about it the whole movie.
Right?
Because I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking, like, okay, I'll just, I think this is the worst movie of the three.
No, it is, and
It bums me out, kind of, that we picked two movies that we aren't crazy about for Hooper, but I think it kind of, I mean, we wanted to pick a late era one, and I don't know where Crocodile is, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and apparently Spontaneous Combustion is even worse.
Okay. So. Yeah. This movie's an hour and 46 minutes long.
It really is. You feel every minute of it.
Every
except for a couple of minutes that are kind of fun.
Yeah, let me just say some nice stuff about this.
Yeah, let's say we tend to be pretty nice on this show.
It looks pretty good.
No, I think
like
it looks
it's a good looking movie.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it's well directed. Like, Englund's insane in this, but he should be. Like, he's playing a cartoon
character.
Englund's
a lot of fun in it. Yeah.
He's playing a Looney Tunes villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me a lot of the guy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the Christopher Lloyd character, right?
That's perfect, yes.
and, like, what's the lead's name? The one who plays Buffalo Bill in Silence
Ted Levine.
Lambs. Ted Levine.
All Ted Levine.
Love Ted Levine.
He's
okay?
So amazing.
Love it. Ted Levine is, like, the weirdest choice for a leading man you could ever make.
Like, he's like too interesting to be a Stephen King leading man.
Because they're usually
bland. They're usually the cipher into the world.
Yes, which is fine.
Which is what they should
it's
be.
Fine.
In a lot of these cases.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like we've talked about, like Pet Sematary, like Dal Midkiff, like in Pet Sematary, like okay.
Yeah, he's just kind of bland, but that's why he's there. He's there because you need someone to latch on to.
He is
crazy
that,
stuff
exactly. Ted Levine is not a relatable person, and his character is nuts. Like his. His character quirk is that he pops antacids. I don't know why. I guess because we need the antacids to make the laundry machine even more evil later on, which is really stupid.
Okay, well, he's got an alcohol issue too, doesn't he?
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, alcoholism and acid reflux can be
okay.
One and the same, so he might have some.
Sure.
Yeah.
That? Sure. I don't know. It's just an incredible choice to me. when your hero cop is Ted Levine.
I couldn't believe it when I saw Ted. I knew very little. I knew Robert Englund was in this movie when I pressed play on the old iTunes.
And you assumed he was probably a bad guy.
Yeah, I assumed he was a bad guy. Like, I kind of, I didn't even know, really, because I had kind of forgotten. It kind of blends together. It's been so long since I've read that short story. I kind of thought it was just a killer washing machine, like, or a killer laundry machine. And then
like
I went, Whirlpool. Oh, this is like, yeah, this is like a industrial size. Like, and then I thought, well, yeah, so I thought, like, Robert Englund, he's going to be the bad guy. And then Ted Levine shows up. That's great. I go, oh, my God, Ted Levine is in this.
Color me intrigued, right?
Yeah, do we have, like, a double villain tandem? No, he's like the cop. He's, like, the main character.
He's the John McClane of this film.
Yeah, he's got a hippie buddy. It's kind of like hippie dippy.
His brother, ex-brother-in-law or something, which is really funny to me because, like, of course, the laundry machine is possessed, right?
Okay,
we covered that. There's a demon in it, right, that they worship.
Yes.
And, of course, his brother-in-law, his bumbling brother-in-law is like an occult expert.
Right.
I love that.
Did you catch the best line of the movie?
I believe you texted it to me.
Oh, which one was that?
Virgin blood or something.
Oh, that was really good too. Yeah. No, the best line in the movie though, I did not text to you. It's when they meet up. I think one of the earlier times he finds out that it's he's like suspicious of his laundry.
Something's up with this
laundry machine. He goes, I don't suppose you know anything about industrial laundries. And his brother-in-law goes, I used to work in industrial laundry at Cal Berkeley.
I didn't even catch that.
I laughed so hard.
So not only is he happens to be an expert in demonology, he's also
an expert,
a laundry expert.
Yeah, maybe not an expert, but he definitely has a familiarity.
He's dabbled in industrial laundry machines.
At Cal Berkeley.
is unreal.
I laughed so hard at that.
He dies horribly in the finale.
There are some good deaths. The old lady's death is disgusting.
It's rough.
It might be too graphic.
It's pretty gross, right?
Because this is a silly ass movie, and for a death that's Toby. There's like no way Toby Hooper did not direct that scene.
Yeah, there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, there's blood everywhere. They show it, and then Ted Levine starts vomiting all over. Yeah,
and then you see her, because this is a machine that presses laundry and folds it, and you see her like pressed and folded at the end of it. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that. Like she's like a pancake. It's so gross.
Yeah, there's some decent gore in this.
There's some decent gore in this. And one by the end of the movie, I mean, like, you're partially exhausted because this movie's too long. There's no question. This movie should be like an hour and like 10 minutes. This should be like Jonah Hex length.
Yeah.
But it's not. This movie gets so stupid by the end. Like, it's a cult. They're worshiping the laundry machine. The whole town's in on it. There's only no telling how long this has been going on. People with missing appendages are members of the cult, which is a really stupid way to show
most
you're
of that
of the
stuff
cult.
Is tacked on to the original. Like that's kind of the stuff that was tacked on to the original story.
Okay,
it's like the conspiracy angle. It's and even dumb. Robert Englund's character is not like the bad guy, I don't think.
Okay,
yeah, he's just kind of there.
Well, there's all this stuff, sacrificing virgins and stuff. It's all very silly, and the fact that it's a laundry machine makes it even sillier. So by the end of this, when the laundry machine becomes like full on sentient and becomes like a shitty early CGI creation that's running around like on all fours like a dog, I kind of just start laughing.
No, it's really funny, but that third act is pretty damn entertaining.
It is kind of entertaining.
It's really funny. I don't know how it looked at the time. I assume everybody kind of went on this fake, but you know.
It probably looked all right.
It probably looked all right. It looks pretty shitty now, but
it's not good.
It's got a charm to it, I think.
This is 93.
Yeah, I think so.
So this is early CG stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the laundry machine looked just as good as like Mortal Kombat CG.
No, it looks fine.
A few years later.
It don't look good, but it's fine. It's fine. I don't know how they get rid of it. Like, it's just kind of like there's a big explosion.
It just gives up, right?
Yeah, the possessed laundry machine just gives up. Until the end, when apparently it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't get the ending. Like, I don't necessarily understand what's going on. Like, okay, she's now a member of the cult, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I didn't really get
it. I don't get that.
I don't really get.
And she's walking with a cane, and she's talking like Robert Englund now. So, like, is she possessed by Robert Englund?
Do you know how the Mangler sequels, how they continue?
I don't know. Lance Henriksen's in the sequel. He's the Mangler in the sequel or something.
Wait, so they're saying that the Mangler is Robert Englund's character?
No, I'm just laughing. I'm just making
sense. Oh, okay. Lance Henriksen voiced the laundry machine.
I thought it'd be funny to call him the Mangler in the second one. I can read you the synopsis of part two.
Oh, please do. Please do.
A teenager girl mistakenly downloads the Mangler 2.0 computer virus.
Excellent.
Into her high school's new state-of-the-art computer system, and all hell breaks loose. Here we go. Here's a better synopsis. Joanne Jo Newton, a girl desperate for attention from her workaholic father, ends with her going to a private school after a break-in at her dad's computer company. The school is undergoing tests of a new security system. Jo and several other students are to remain,
the writing did not get any better with the synopsis.
This is written by Wallace Entertainment. Are to remain behind while the others leave for spring break. Little does Headmaster Bradeen, played by Lance Henriksen, know, but Jo has hacked into the computer and has unleashed a super virus called Mangler 2.0 in the security system. But what she doesn't know is that this virus literally has a mind of its own, and it controls everything around the school, so it is very capable of killing everyone in sight.
So the Mangler 2.0, it seems to be the demon from the Mangler.
Has
jumped into another machine this time.
Yeah.
Has entered the digital age.
Sure. The cover has...
Yeah, let's see the cover real quick.
Lance Henriksen.
I remember that one. I think we had that at the video store.
Yeah. It has like a robot Lance Henriksen. I'm assuming he becomes a robot at some point in the film. I can only hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I'm probably not going to. And then there's a third film in the Mangler series.
Good, I'm glad you're going to read this.
That was from 2005. So 3 years after Mangler 2, we have The Mangler Reborn.
Weird that they decided in 2002, we got a little juice left in the Mangler series. Like, we could turn this one.
I think that was one where they made the movie, and then let's call it The Mangler 2.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a script that he just, because I don't think it's related in any way. Like, there's not even an explanation for it being the same thing. But the Mangler Reborn Yeah. It is a direct sequel to this Mangler.
Excellent.
A decade after the original massacre, another man obsessed over his machine ends with several murders and possession. So this one's actually kind of tied to the...
Okay.
It has Reggie Bannister in it.
Excellent.
So there's that.
Excellent.
For what it's worth.
It does.
Anyway, so that is...
Yeah, the thought that kept running through my mind during the Mangler, all hour and 40 minutes, is like, I don't know how you make a good movie out of this.
This is... I heard a funny quote once about the Ninja Turtles movie.
Uh-huh.
I think it's from Ebert or Roper. It's from Siskel Ebert. Somebody. It's from a critic. And they were like, if somebody was given, like if a person was given the homework assignment of make the best movie you can about four turtles that become ninjas after being hit with radioactive waste, this would receive an A+. If somebody were to say, I need you to make a film about a killer laundry machine, this is pretty good. It's about as good as it gets, right?
I don't know what else you can do with a stationary industrial laundry machine.
That's the silliest part.
Why do they keep going near it?
Well, that's the thing, is you don't win with this because it can't, like, okay, it does run around later in the movie, but if you don't have it run around and stay stationary, I don't believe it as a threat because it can't do anything unless you're dumb enough to stick your hand in it, which all these people apparently are. If you do make it start running around, it looks stupid.
Yeah.
So you're at all, you lose.
Yes.
It's a losing idea.
Yeah. And you can't have it. Yeah. You can't have it running around until that third act.
Right.
Because it can't be running around the whole movie. Yeah. Unless it's like Transformers, where like nobody realizes the Transformers are around.
It would be kind of funny.
I would actually like that. But they're not going to do that in 1994, 95, whatever this is made. So.
Yeah. Let's a few facts about Mangler. Let's see. There's a gate in the background of one of the beginning scenes after Sherry initially hurts herself on the clamp. A banner on the gate reads, "Labor will set you free," just as the gate into Auschwitz read. Very deep for the Mangler.
It's kind of intrinsic in the plot of the movie. There is a little bit going on with like the mean corporation like using people's bodies to feed the machine so he could just make a bunch of money off of the poor working man.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's specific to the time period. It kind of is, but it's kind of specific to most time periods.
Yeah.
There's a little bit going on there. It's not necessarily explored to any great depths, but
I don't know.
It kind of is.
After the old woman's accident, the crime scene photographer is seen wearing a similar hat and scarf as the colors of Freddy Krueger. Kind of fun. Obviously, Robert Englund, best known for his role as Freddy. And then here's one. Hadley Watson is the manufacturer of the Mangler laundry press. It's displayed on the front. Each of these words have six letters in them. And then there's a big six right underneath those words. So there you go. 666, right?
Yep.
Kind of fun. Anything else on the Mangler here, Tim?
I think I'm good. Yep. Not my favorite. If you're looking for schlocky mid-90s.
This is very much a drink and watch.
You know what? There is one more thing on the Mangler here, because I found a quote. Let me find it real quick. I found a quote, and it's really funny giving this past year. Let me find it real quick. I'm sorry. I turned the page here.
Oh, you're okay.
I'm not electronic anymore. I got to get a new computer sooner or later. The Mangler, this is from Cinefantastique. A critic from there said, "The King franchise is justifiably dead, but its damage to the genre lives on."
Wow.
Yeah. I will give a little bit of leeway to him. This was at the tail end of the King.
No. Boom. No, this is a time when that is a very fair quote.
Yeah, that's a fair quote. Yeah. But he had, in the long run...
Oh.
The damage to the genre thing is a bit much. But I guess I can see what he's saying there when he's just got done watching the Mangler of like, here's a laundry
machine. You're hurting inside a little bit.
And you need to lash out.
Yes. King's doing okay. He's about to get a huge renaissance here, movie wise. All right, so later years for Toby Hooper post Mangler, we've got The Apartment Complex in 1999. Never saw that one.
I think I have seen that one.
Okay. Do you remember anything about it?
No, it had Tyra Banks in it.
There you go.
It was on Showtime late at night one time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Crocodile in 2000, which is about a killer crocodile.
I've heard that one's okay.
Yeah, I've heard it's not bad either. Yeah. This is another one I haven't seen. Toolbox Murders in 2004, not my favorite.
I completely forgot about that one.
Mortuary in 2005.
Never seen that one.
Destiny Express Redux in 2009. That's the one I have zero knowledge of. And finally, Jin in 2013. There were a couple of movies called Jin that came out around that time. This is one of those.
You have
movies.
Seen one of them.
I haven't seen this one.
We have inside information on the other one.
Yeah, we sure do.
We had a spy on the set.
A pal who perhaps was involved in the production of that film.
Uh-huh.
But not this one.
God, that would have been sweet if he was involved in this one, though. Working with Toby Hooper? Yeah.
Who would have brought him on? anyway, that's it for the Toby Hooper filmography. Tim.
Yo.
What is Toby Hooper's legacy, in your opinion?
Toby Hooper is a guy who I think worked really hard. And I think you can't ignore the fact that I'll say a lot of his movies they're not great. You can't ignore that fact, but that doesn't mean that there aren't merit. Even The Mangler has merit, especially when taken with the rest of his filmography. It shares a lot in common with, Robert Englund, and there's a certain old time quality to it, blah, blah, blah. Blah. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that continued to work, and he continued to find work, and he's a director who, I'm trying to think of a better way to say, like, there was nothing, he didn't look down on any job he was given, it seemed. He didn't look down on directing music videos when music videos first started. He didn't look down on co-directing with Steven Spielberg at the time. He didn't look down on television when television kind of had a little bit of a horror boom in the 90s with Tales from the Crypt and stuff like The X-Files and Freddy's Nightmares and all that. He didn't look down on directing that. He found work where he could find work, and he made a career out of directing. And he also made one of the most important movies of all time in the horror genre. He never topped it. He always tried to, it seems, but he never topped it. But that's not a bad thing, because it would be very, very hard to top that movie. So at the end of the day, yeah, he's incredibly important. And he didn't just fade away. He left a body of work that I think deserves to be looked at. And I would like to dive into a couple of these movies on the list that I have not seen a little more.
Agreed. I can't say any better what you just said. I completely agree. His legacy is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
That's his legacy. And I think he is something to aspire to for young filmmakers. And why I say that is because of his adaptability. And it goes back to what you said about this is a guy who is not afraid to embrace changes in his status, changes in his career, not afraid to take risks, to take things like the Canon contract, which did it work out? Not necessarily financially, but that's a chance to take. That's a risk to take, and he went for it, and good for him. He would not have been able to make Life Force for any other studio.
Right. Right.
So I think he should be an inspiration in a world where, unfortunately, and I'm not involved in the film industry. I don't know that many people in the film industry, but I feel like just in general, a lot of folks from my generation, and maybe even we're in the same generation, but
right, no.
A lot of folks from our generation tend to be very rigid in their thinking and aren't afraid or are too afraid to take risks,
mm-hmm.
and are too afraid to adapt. I think they have a hard time adapting sometimes.
Right.
And I think that this is, I don't know. I think if anything, it's a lesson to don't be afraid of that stuff. Embrace it. It's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Change is sometimes scary, but it's also an opportunity. So
it's kind of like there's a parallel with athletes. Like, not every great athlete wins a Super Bowl. Toby Hooper won the Super Bowl with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And it was the first time he played.
It was, yeah, totally. So like, there is something to that. I mean, yeah, he never topped it, but not every director makes a movie like that.
No.
And then not every director follows up a movie with an actual career.
True.
So good for him.
Absolutely.
And he seemed like a good dude.
He did. Yeah. Got a couple of Toby Hooper quotes here. Tim, I know you have a really good one. It was hard to find Toby Hooper quotes. He's a silly guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of a funny, like, laid back guy. And the one I found that I thought was kind of fun, that to me, my interpretation of Toby Hooper from interviews and stuff, this kind of sums up just how, I don't know, just his personality, and he's just kind of like, You know, it's all right. He said, I worked so hard for so long that I had a speech impediment. It happens when I get tired. Like, I love that. He's just like, it happens. And you, did you have the quote written down?
Yeah.
This is a really nice quote. I'm glad you found this.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly where I found it. It was an interview he was doing, but he said, I always wanted to work in the time before I was born. Tobe Hooper grew up a fan of 50s movies. He talks about as a kid, he spent most of his life, like his young life, in movie theaters. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how he knew the world. And so I always wanted to work in the time before I was born. I think that's kind of a poignant quote, especially for someone who you can see a lot of the 50s influences on screen, particularly in stuff like Life Force and Invaders from Mars. Mm-hmm. As well. It's a remake of a 50s movie.
Yeah.
So you see that a lot, and I think it's kind of a cool quote for him.
It is a cool quote. Yeah, for sure. I think it's neat. I think it's cool to hear a director just say, like, especially now when you see a lot of the young directors you see now, you're like, these guys wish they were working in the 80s.
Because right.
A lot of what they're making is, I don't want to say, but it's inspired by a lot of those films. And I think it's cool that Tobe Hooper's just like, hey, I would have killed it back then.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys, for joining us for this very special episode of Horror Movie Yearbook. We really enjoyed talking about Tobe Hooper. I think we both learned some new stuff about him and his work, and that's cool. Anytime we get to do that is great.
These episodes are a lot of fun. I like them a lot.
Yeah, I enjoy doing these. And I promise that there are times when we'll do these episodes where our subjects will still be alive.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yep. It just so happens that this year, unfortunately, we've been hit by a couple of big losses in the horror industry. And I think it's important to remember those folks. You know?
Yeah, me too.
If you have feedback, and I want to say this for the end of the episode because we didn't have any this week, please be sure to send us feedback. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. We're on Twitter @HMYearbook. You can email us, horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Check us out at the website, horrormovieyearbook.com. Once again, rate and review us on iTunes. That really helps us out. We appreciate that. And special thanks as always to Mr. John Morrell for our music. And big thanks to Greg Long for our artwork. And that does it for this episode. What do we got coming down the pipeline here, Tim?
What do we have coming down the pipeline?
We haven't really talked about this.
No, we haven't. We're going to do one more episode and then the end of the year episode, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is that what we want to do?
Yeah,
okay.
I believe so. I think
we're going to bring back our class of current year, so class of 2017 at the end of the year.
That will be our end of year episode.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. It's been a year, man.
It really has been.
And I mean that it's been a good year. I don't know. You know what? Let's not make an announcement right now. Because I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know if we need to finally release that Exorcist Fight the Franchise.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not sure. What do you think?
I can crank... I've got two left to watch of those.
You got two left to watch?
Yeah, you want to do... is Nikki...
We'll make it happen.
Okay.
All right.
We got to run it by Nikki.
All right. I think we're going to be doing Exorcist. I'm thinking that's what we're going to do.
Let's mix it up at the end of the year.
Do our Fight the Franchise, and then we'll do our end of... back to kind of a normal episode, although a more current episode, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Awesome, Tim. Well, thanks for joining me tonight. It was delightful, as always.
I had a lot of fun. I like it.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye-bye, man and woman.